Welcome to the SAI Podcast Series, a production of the Carnegie Mellon University Software Engineering Institute. The SAI is a federally funded research and development center sponsored by the U.S. Department of Defense. A transcript of today's podcast is available on the SAI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcasts. My name is Will Hayes. I'm a principal engineer in the SAI's Software Solutions Division. I'm joined today by my old friend, Girish Seshagiri. And we're here to talk about a collaboration that he had with our Nancy Mead and collaborator Julie Hauer. The title of their article is Meeting Industry Needs for Secure Software Development. And so, Girish, you've been working with us for many years, and your leadership in the Peoria, Illinois area is certainly well known to us. Tell us a little bit about this latest collaboration.
Oh, this one came about because the last 3 or 4 years, we've been trying to figure out how do you create the future workforce that's capable of developing software that is secure from cyber attacks. As you know, and in this building, everybody knows that cyber attacks are a big problem. They're increasing. And also now new data suggests that 90% of the attacks are coming from exploiting defects in software. And the reason for that is the software people are not properly trained to do this work. So there'll be no vulnerabilities in the software they're delivering, hence no attacks. And so the training and education is a very big part of it.
And so what approach are you taking to improve on our current situation there?
Well, number one was working with the Department of Homeland Security, who, by the way, said cybersecurity is a national security issue. And so being in D.C. now, I would start with their working group trying to address this issue. And they funded Nancy Mead here at the SAI to develop a software assurance curriculum. So I found out about that, and I reached out to Nancy and said, here's what I'm trying to do in Peoria. Could you help me? And she was fabulously came forward and said, yeah, let's work on it. And what she had done was she had created a curriculum for the four-year program and the graduate level. And I wanted it at the community college level, which is as a more of a vocational training, and also get more people into it as opposed to people going through the traditional four-year route.
So I picked up something in your article about the frequency of the popularity of community colleges. In fact, half of U.S. undergraduates attend community college at some point.
It's one of the most marvelous things that we have as a vocational training education provider nationally. And if you've been watching the State of the Union and so on, talks that the presidents give, the last two or three presidents keep talking about every year, we're going to put more money into community college, which is all good. So there obviously is it's already set up. And the principal of that college in Peoria was a good friend of mine, which helps. So I went to him and said, we want to do this, and we have this curriculum. And he said, wait till I'm hiring a new dean, and wait till she comes on board. And Julie Hauer was the one. She came on board.
Okay.
And so she took Nancy's work, and Nancy had also put together as foresight to say that here's how you actually recommendations she made, here's how you do it in the community college. So Julie Hauer took that, and within about a year or so, actually got it through the accreditation board and so on, and created an associate degree in secure software development, which we call the first in the nation in Peoria.
Great. So I think there's a unique aspect to the way you're leveraging the knowledge transfer, the educational programs available in community college. You're incorporating an apprenticeship model with what you're doing. Can you talk a bit about that?
Sure. This is really interesting. There's a national move now towards apprenticeships. But the U.S. has always done apprenticeships. Mm-hmm. Those of us that come from a manufacturing background, we know in manufacturing this is how you get people skills. And in the company that I worked, even a president of the company came through the apprenticeship program. But then as that workforce started going down and we kind of got away from it. But the Germans and in Switzerland and Austria and places like that, they use apprenticeship principally to get young people into a workforce, get them the skills while they're actually going and learning it, the theoretical part in a college setting, but simultaneously they're also being trained on the job, being paid an apprentice wage. So they call this a dual model. So you do college and you do things. When I found out about it, I thought this makes a lot of sense. Because we also have these other problems in the U.S., which is One, we have this skills gap. We got employers like us that have the jobs, but we can't find people that have the skills. So it addresses that. The other one is the student debt, which is now increasing, approaching, it just crossed $1 trillion a couple of years ago. Not sustainable. And we have very high youth unemployment here. I shouldn't say very high. We are double digit, whereas in those countries, they have single digit. So they claim, and the data shows that these problems kind of get solved with this. And so I thought, okay, maybe we should try that. But I didn't know anything about it, so I had to go find out. And the German embassy in D.C. helped me.
Okay.
And some of the German chambers of commerce helped me. So that's another point that I like to make is when you do something like this, you find out that you can't do it by yourself.
Yeah.
You need help from lots of different people. And I was very fortunate that I knew the SEI people. That was very helpful. And the SEI was a big help. The college was a big help. And some of these other people.
So I know from Nancy's past work, her long dedication to improving the lot of the folks that are coming through educational programs and really preparing for the workforce we need in the future. I read in your article you've managed to find a way to document the return on investment from the industry side for this activity of paying interns. Can you talk a little bit?
If you take a look at nationally, we're today spending about $400 billion in post-secondary education, just getting people through college. But then after college, when they come to work for us, we spend, in industry, $600 billion to get them the skills that they need to be able to do the job. Enormous costs that we have. It's really not quite sustainable. And then if you take a look at the skills gap, the fact that we have jobs that are going unfilled, and there's a cost to that. And then how long it takes for it, once you get them from a college, and to get them trained, and that's time, that's money. And so you take a look at all of those things, and then you say, you come up with a way that you don't have to have all of those. You will have a pipeline of talented people, and you will have them with the skills that you need, and also, you as an employer can get involved in terms of defining the competencies that they need to have. So part of the kinds of changes that we're starting to see now in higher education and this whole area is that the companies are getting involved in specifying what the training should be. And also we're specifying in terms of not the number of hours somebody should be in an institution and getting a degree, a number of credits, but we're talking about the actual competencies. So working with Nancy, we were able to say, here are the competencies somebody should have to do secure software development. And then we have validation at the end of that in terms of, like, for instance, the part of the on-the-job training that we have for secure software development is the work that came out of here in the team software process and the personal software process. So again, the TSP team has been a big help for us under Jim Over's leadership. So you take the PSP developer certification, that's the gateway to say that they have a competency to manage their software work and so on.
Okay.
So what happens is, by the time they come out of this, these people are readily employable, and you basically invested in their skills, and you paid them apprentice wages as opposed to full-time $50,000, $60,000 a year.
So you're really enhancing the educational experience they have, putting their hands on work, and getting actual experience doing the work as they're acquiring new knowledge from the educational institutions.
Absolutely. Then the other thing is that the Department of Labor, the U.S. Department of Labor, has an Office of Apprenticeship. So when you come up with a program like this, you work with them and you actually call it a registered apprenticeship program. So which means that people are getting nationally recognized credentials.
Nice.
And they have to meet the standards that we define for that, which by the way, we already have done that now for secure software development.
Okay, and I read that there's a focus on diversity, so we're really reaching out to get the best of all the communities available to us.
Absolutely, and one of the issues in technology work is that there are groups that are underrepresented in that, particularly women, minorities, and veterans. So we need to, unless we really reach out to them, they're not going to be coming there.
And I read also that you're very clever in enlisting the support of organizations that are in place to promote this kind of growth, and you've given them a new outlet for doing good in the world.
Well, that's right. One of the things that you need to do is to bring people together, right? And there are a lot of people that have been concerned about this problem for a while. It's amazing what's going on. Now there's high school girls are learning about coding. Okay, there are groups of people that are Girl Scouts, as being part of Girl Scouts, they're learning that.
So there's a badge for Girl Scouts?
Yes.
Secure coding?
coding.
Okay. Coding, okay.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do is to make sure that it'll be secure.
Okay.
So hopefully, and the other notion is that we need to provide career pathways to our young people as they're going through the school, that they need to know that there are many, many occupations out there. So they need to figure out what's involved in that. And programming is a good example. You don't have to be a nerd or a geek to do programming, right? I mean, some of us may be exceptional. Okay,
well, we might enjoy it.
We enjoy it. Right? But on the other hand, if you have an aptitude for it, and if you have a logical mind, you can be a software developer. And so people need to find out about that. Mm-hmm. And even community college, I think it's too late for them to be thinking about it. So what we would like to see, so Nancy and I are going to start working on this now. What kind of competencies and skills and preparations that people need to have in the, say, the 11th and 12th grades,
okay,
or maybe even earlier than that, so that by the time they're ready to come into the community college and our program, we know that they're capable, they're ready, and we can very quickly get them through that.
Well, and I think as we think about how we rely on our younger people, I know my children help me with my iPhone on a regular basis.
Sure,
their
right.
talents in being knowledge workers need to outpace those of the people who are training them.
That's exactly right, exactly right. And I think if we don't, I think we're not utilizing a tremendous resource that we have. And I don't think we want to leave anybody behind. The tech revolution the last time really did leave out women and minorities in a big way, the big dot-com era and so on. And now we're having another revolution starting, and I think, in my way of thinking, secure software development could be a revolution because, and you know this, we're talking about 50 billion devices coming online the next 5 years in the Internet of Things. And they all have software in it. Some of them have millions of lines of code software in it. And they're being done by people that are may not be trained to do it the right way, to do it securely. Mm. There's a tremendous opportunity there. There's going to be lots of jobs. Right now, the numbers are like 1.2 million jobs are unfilled in cybersecurity globally today. Just think about that. If we had people that have the skills, can really take those jobs on, the impact it'll have on our economy, what good it can do. And these are jobs that pay well. The average salary is something like $60,000, entry levels in these kinds of things. So our job now is to make sure that we can get these skills to as many people as we can in as short a period as we can. And this is why collaboration is extremely important.
And I think it seems the model you have of relying on local organizations, community colleges, allows you to scale while not losing track of the local communities you're trying to serve.
That's right.
That's fairly elegant.
Right. When we started that, you will see in the article we said, the Central Illinois Center of Excellence for Secure Software, CICESS, we pronounce it success. I really wanted it originally, Central Illinois Regional Center of Excellence for Secure Software. Mm. And then somebody pointed out, that's CIRCES, so that's circus.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, we don't want that. Okay. But the idea is, so we now rebranded it to Community Initiative, Center of Excellence for Secure Software. And that's the way it's going to happen. Every community needs to take a look at this as not a technical matter, but take a look at it as an economic development issue.
And as a leader in industry in your region, I think you're coming to this from the perspective of needs that industry has and partnering with us, and I know you know our work very well.
Absolutely.
I think the ability to get the right people together is enhanced when you're looking at a local level as opposed to just trying to scale this to be a national program.
That's right. You know, I was very happy and thank Dr. Paul Nielsen. He and Jim Over, they took the time, they came to Peoria, they saw what we were doing. And then the paper wrote an article about him. So I told Paul, you played well in Peoria, okay? But this is important that the whatever we do has some credibility. And in places like Peoria, we say we're working with Carnegie Mellon Software Engineering Institute. That adds to the fact that this is a vetted program that's created by people that know what they're doing. And then anymore, you don't have to have all tech companies in an area. Every company is, in one way or the other, a software company, right?
Yeah.
And so in Peoria, we have the major earth-moving manufacturer, and we have the hospitals, which are all big users of IT, and particularly worried about cybersecurity with healthcare information, which is all what we call personally identifiable information. How do you safeguard that? big issues, people concerned about it. So our job is to help them, get them the people that they need, and that way create jobs.
So you've talked about how this can transfer to other communities and perhaps to other industries. Could you talk a little bit about how another community that sees your success might want to pick up and get started?
Sure. You know, it's a good point. Like Nancy and I, we were at this Allegheny Community College over the weekend, and they asked us to do a keynote talk on what we're doing.
Oh, great.
Which we do. So one of the things that could happen, I told them, the college people, when you go back to your communities, and you have our contact information, but try to put together a group. This is not just an education issue, it's an economic development issue. So pull in your Chamber of Commerce and your economic development groups that may be there, as well as make sure that everybody understands that we're talking about education and skills, but also talking about job creation, and get them together, and then make sure the employers are involved. And this initiative will succeed if it's employer-driven. These are the people that have the jobs. Those are the people that you need to have on board to actually pay the apprentice an apprentice wage, so we don't have the student debt and all of that. So if they need to do that, and then we're there to say, look, this is like a cookbook method, cookie cutter approach. We can say, this is, we already done it. You take the same steps that that college in Peoria did and the employers did there, and you should have a program. So I'm telling them right now, we need to be targeting for the fall of 2017 for the next cohort nationally in a bunch of different colleges. And that's kind of what I'm working on.
So what's in it for industry is the expense they incur preparing people who, while they come from very good educational programs, don't have the experience doing those things.
That's
an expense you help to eliminate for them.
That's correct.
And the funding required to do this work that might otherwise lead to student debt, you're sharing that cost across the different parties. And as a community focus on economic development and job growth, that defrays other potential costs for the community as well.
Sure.
So there's really a nice virtuous cycle here.
Absolutely. And there is funding on the federal side. So there's Department of Labor has grant money. They have a major initiative called American Apprenticeship Initiative. And this project, the CI Success Project in Peoria, is a recipient of that grant. So
Great.
Community college there got some funding to do the initial work to define the curriculum and so on. So the model that I'm looking for is maybe we can get the industry to take about 60-70% of the expense. Maybe federal dollars could be like 20-30%. And so with that split, maybe we can attack this problem and create these middle class jobs.
Great. Sounds like really exciting work. What's next? Are you going to hop to a new industry, or are you staying with us in software and information technology?
Me personally, you mean?
In terms of applying this model.
Oh, this model. No, I think what we would do is we would probably try to get to some nationally, like some of the, like San Antonio, Texas is a good example. It's the second largest cybersecurity market. And they have a nice setup there, the community college system, and the employers all working together, so we're talking to them. And also have, looking at the high school end of it. So it's groups like that. And then the Department of Labor has what they call sectors of excellence. And they have leaders, and I'm a designated leader for the IT cybersecurity sector of excellence along with three or four other people. And they would put on industry days or kind of stuff like all day thing with panel discussion. We'll be on the panel going around talking about the importance of all the stuff we've been talking about.
Great. So there's a ready-made vehicle. There's already a lot of work underway.
There's a lot of work underway. That's why I think it's going to be exciting over the next 2 to 3 years to see if you can actually turn around. We need to see the cybersecurity attacks, the number turning down, right? For instance, we need the youth unemployment numbers to go down. We need more young people into jobs. We need to get the minorities and the women into the professions. So that's why it's going to be exciting over the next 2-3 years to see all of that kind of coming together.
Great.
And we have a secure software development industry out there.
Well, we look forward to hearing about your continued success. You've been with us a long time.
You will, because the SCI is such a big part of this, and without the SCI, this would not happen.
Girish, thank you very much for joining us today. This podcast is available on the SCI website at sei.cmu.edu/podcast. Thank you very much.